President Biden is arguing that during a pandemic, this is the moment to reimagine and rebuild a new economy. And he wants to do it, starting with a $2 trillion infrastructure plan he's unveiling today in Pittsburgh. But will it be politically doable in a divided country? Just this morning, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce called Biden's proposed corporate tax hikes to pay for it dangerously misguided. Our political strategists join us now. We've got Matt Mikowiak, a Republican. Matt, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Good to have you. And there's also Jamal Simmons here, a Democrat. Hi, Jamal.
Hi, happy to be here.
So, Jamal, this is a big day for the White House. It's also a very big price tag. What do you think this infrastructure plan is signaling about the direction the president is trying to take the country?
Well, it's more than signaling. I think this infrastructure plan is going to put on the table things that we've been, we meaning the American public, have been clamoring for a decade and a half, at least, maybe a couple decades. They're going to spend money, I think, $115 billion in highway and bridges, 20,000 miles of highway, the 10 most economically significant bridges, and the 10,000 worst bridges around the country. Everybody's got a bridge story. They're going to fix lead pipes, which we know from Flint was a huge problem. And my sort of pet issue, which is around high-speed broadband. They're going to put $100 billion into making sure 100% of the country is covered by broadband. This is a huge deal. It's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to put people to work, and it's going to fix a lot of problems in the country.
Matt? What do you think? I mean, everything that Jamal just said, he laid out what this bill would focus on, roads, bridges, lead pipes, high-speed internet for everybody. Those are pretty popular things around the country. Are Republicans on board?
No, they're not going to be on board with a $2 trillion plan that has massive tax increases in it. It's the wrong time to raise taxes coming out of COVID. It's pretty shocking, honestly, that they would even propose massive tax increases at a time where the economy has been very weak, where people have been feeling desperation around the country, where restaurants have been decimated, hospitality, the arts. You could look at so many industries that have been hurt. Now, look, when you spend $2 trillion, you're going to do some good things. Jamal pointed to some of them, certainly, and our infrastructure in our country does need work. And this is one of the failings of the Trump administration. He talked a big game about infrastructure. It used to be a joke, about Infrastructure Week time and time and time again. He never put a plan together. He never found a pathway forward. And honestly, the distance between what Republicans want to do, which is leverage private dollars with public-private partnerships, and what Democrats want to do, which is raise taxes and do massive spending through the federal government, I think is unbridgeable. You know, I hope they can get to a deal that's in the middle that's good for the country, but it seems to me like they're going to be too far apart, and I think these tax increases are a non-starter.
Jamal, I do want to give you a chance to respond to the price tag and raising taxes, but first, Matt, go a little bit deeper in what you think it would take to get Republicans' support. It sounds like you're saying there's a different philosophy on how to raise the money to do this.
Yeah, there is a huge philosophical difference. And keep in mind, I mean, something like 95 or 97% of all Republicans in the House and Senate have signed a pledge not to ever vote for a tax increase. So that in and of itself presents a major problem. But this plan would almost have to be revenue neutral to gain significant Republican support. But I think there's just a fundamental breakdown between what Republicans see as a realistic pathway, which is not making it entirely publicly funded, but using public-private partnerships. The Democrats haven't really shown a lot of interest in that model being the primary method for infrastructure. They want to do massive spending, choose the projects from the federal side, add all these other things that they want to do. These are about Democratic priorities, and they're going to try to deliver that. We'll see where they have the votes. They have a very narrow majority in the House and a 50-50 tie in the Senate. So this is going to be very tricky.
Jamal, the president is proposing to raise corporate taxes from 21% to 28%. But, you know, that is still lower than what they were at the start of President Trump's term. So how are Democrats going to sell this? Can they get by what Matt has just described, that resistance from Republicans?
Well, what may happen is this package gets broken up into two, maybe three pieces. One of those pieces may have a tax price tag in it that the Republicans don't want to be for, but another piece of it may be something Republicans can vote for. We'll see. But I listened to Matt talk, and it's like, as George W. Bush would say, fool me once, shame on me, don't fool me. The last time President Obama was in office, he proposed what we call the infrastructure bank, which was a public-private partnership infrastructure plan. He couldn't get the Republicans to sign up on board because Mitch McConnell refused to do a deal. So if the Democrats want to spend all their time chasing Republicans, and I think bipartisanship is good and we should try to get Republicans on board if possible, but you just can't not fix the country because Republicans want to play politics. And I think that's the calculation going on inside the Biden White House. Let's get something done for the people, and then the people can decide if they like it or not, and they'll either vote for Democrats or not in 2 years.
Jamal, we're not there yet, but this conversation that we're having makes me think that it's possible, and some people are talking about this already, that to get this through, we're talking about budget reconciliation again. Again, no Republican support. Is that a good idea? If it came to that, is that something Democrats should be willing to do?
You know, after the way the Republicans denied Obama his Supreme Court pick, the way Republicans pushed through, got rid of the filibuster in order to get Supreme Court justices passed, all the ways Republicans tried to bend and break the system to make it work, it's so rich to hear Republicans complain now about Democrats looking for ways to get their agenda passed. Elections do have consequences. Look, once you do it, I'm sure Republicans, if they get back in charge, they're going to try to do it again. But the question is, the issues on the table are so important. Americans are hungering for getting these things fixed in the country. They're also hungering for getting the wealth inequality gap closed and making sure not just the richest 1% participate, but that everybody in the country gets a chance to enjoy the fruit of our labor. That is what the Democrats are up to. And if we can do that, I think that the Biden administration will do a lot to making the country work and holding this country together and not seeing more January 6th uprisings.
Well, look, I think that was a productive conversation, and I do want to move on. We're going to have a chance to talk about infrastructure for weeks, I presume. Mm-hmm. There's another ambitious bill that we need to get to. When Congress gets back from recess, Senate Democrats want to join the House in passing a sweeping voting rights bill. There's a lot in this bill, but among other things, it would include national voter registration, mail-in voting standards, nonpartisan redistricting commissions, and big changes to campaign finance laws. Matt, you weigh in. Where's this headed?
Well, I mean, it's passed the House, as I understand it, and it's now, you know, head to the Senate. We're going to see if Kristen Sinema from Arizona, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, perhaps John Tester from Montana, ultimately hold out because the Democrats can't lose even one vote to still pass it. Look, there's a huge gulf between what Republicans believe is appropriate on election law and what Democrats believe is appropriate. You know, Republicans oppose ballot harvesting. Republicans oppose anything that makes it easy to vote illegally. Republicans support voter ID. Republicans oppose nationalizing elections. Elections are conducted by states, by counties, not by the federal government. And those are views that the Democrats strongly disagree with. So it seems to me the Democrats like the results in 2020 and certainly with the Georgia Senate runoffs, where emergency rules were used to expand voting access. They like those results. They want to make those rules permanent. Republicans don't want that. They don't believe that these emergency powers should be used now that we're getting through COVID. So there's a huge ideological difference there, and we'll see where it heads. I think the Senate is going to be very, very, very close, but the stakes on this are extremely high.
Matt, you mentioned illegal voting. I just got to say, there is really no evidence of illegal voting happening at a very wide scale in this country. I got to say that. But you did also mention something important that I want Jamal to weigh in on, which is that for the most part, state elections have been up to the states. Do you think this is territory for the federal government, Jamal?
It is territory for the federal government. We established that with the Voting Rights Act in the 60s. And what happened is the Supreme Court gutted that Voting Rights Act and got rid of preclearance. And so what we've seen since preclearance has gone away is a raft of legislation coming out of the states that has been ratcheting back voting rights for citizens. And we've had a hard time as a country to combat that. You know, we talk about federalizing versus states. What about the local elections? And what you saw in the Georgia bill that just passed is the Georgia state legislature has decided it alone will have the authority to usurp the power of a locally elected election board in a state. So a city like Atlanta, like Fulton County, where majority black, if they pick an election board and they have an election and they like the election, the state of Georgia can come in and say, not so fast, and change it all and take over that election board. I think those are the kind of things that the 72 African-American executives were in the New York Times writing about this morning, saying that we have got to stand up for our core principle as Americans, that voting should be something everybody has access to, is fair, and it cannot be corrupted by a conservative try to take over because they don't like election results. They didn't like what happened in last year.
This week, The New Yorker obtained some audio of Kyle McKenzie. This is a research director for the Koch Run advocacy group Stand Together. He was giving a presentation to conservatives about how hard it is for Republicans to message against the voting rights bill that passed the House this month. It's known as H.R. 1. Let's listen.
The most worrisome part is that conservatives were actually as supportive as the general public was when they read the neutral description of H.R. 1.
Matt, I think that's important. We've got less than a minute. What do you think? Republicans actually were supportive of that language.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the whatever he's citing specifically. All these things depend on, you know, basically what the language that's used in the polling and in the questions and how they're asked. You know, I think sending federal dollars to fund, fund political campaigns, that's really problematic. Obviously, the Republicans and Democrats disagree on whether convicted felons all over the country should have access to legal voting. That's been a state by state issue up to this point. Elections integrity, election security, those are issues there. There are a lot of issues here. I just think there's a huge divide between the parties.
Lots more to talk about. Matt McCulbiac and Jamal Simmons. I got to run, Jamal. So sorry. I got to run. Thank you so much.